señor.
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB podcast. I'm Jorge Georgie Martin and joined by Primo Hector Reyes. ¿Cómo estamos?
What's up, guys? I'm good. Ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, Ricky's still out in the national parks on a nice family road trip. So, again, we're going to catch up with them when we can. But everybody, gracias for joining us. Como siempre, es un placer y estamos aquí a servirlos. Make sure to check out our website at familiaffb.com, as well as our social media channels at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram, as well as our Familia FFB Facebook page. Well, you know, we got tons of chisme going on. Let's so, go. Chisme! Chisme! So, you know, we touched on it in our last show. The Big Ten was leaning toward moving their season to the new year, and they made it official. They postponed it. They didn't cancel it, and the Pac-12 followed suit right after that. So they're not going to play until the new year. And
tentatively.
Tentatively. So please, you know, find us a vaccine. But, you know, but the interesting part is the Big 12 has announced that it is continuing to play. And the ACC and the SEC have not announced what they're doing, whether they're postponing play. So that's going to be weird. It's almost like each of the conferences, it's is their own league.
It's so, really weird. I really don't get it. Like I've said, I don't get it how – and I guess I don't know if this shows – the power or the weakness, however you want to look at it, of the NCAA. You know, I mean, behind closed doors, what is the NCAA stance? Have they actually said, hey, guys, we don't want you guys to play, or hey, guys, it's okay to play? You know what I'm saying? So of all these conferences, who has thumbed their nose to the NCAA and who has agreed to, you know, what the NCAA stance is? It's hard to say, but I think as this kind of plays out, I think we're going to see that more and more. The NCAA is definitely losing its luster, and I don't know, you know, it's going to come out eventually, I think, where, you know, the questions are going to start being asked is, you know, why isn't the NCAA coming out with a solid stance on this? You know, why aren't they protecting these kids? I mean, these are, you know, 18, 19-year-old kids. I mean, these are not professionals getting paid. These are kids that are, you know, they play college sports, you know, essentially for the fun of it. And yes, it makes a lot of money for these conferences and for these schools. But essentially, there's, you know, for the majority of these kids, you know, it's not going to lead to any kind of anything lucrative, any kind of professional career. It's kind of what they do during college years. You know, you play sports, you know, you compete and you have fun. So I don't know. The NCAA, I don't know, man. It's not a good look for them. The fact that they haven't just come out and said, everybody, you know, close up shop. You know, it's really starting to look like they're just in it for the money. It's not a good look.
Well, I think they're leaving it up to the conferences, really, because of the money. I mean, they've got these lucrative TV contracts that are just – it's hard for them to say no to that money. And I guess the Big 12 really feels like they – you know, they're in areas where they can play. I mean, they've got several schools – they've got multiple schools in Texas where – the pandemic is going crazy. I mean, I'm not going to be an epidemiologist.
No, for sure. Of course.
I hope they play. I hope whatever they're doing, they're taking all, you know, the safety protocols completely seriously, and also ensuring that the players are being safe away from the field, because it really looks like, you know, that they can keep everybody safe in the facilities. It's outside of the facilities that are the problem. Nick Saban said that. So,
oh, of course. These are 18 and 19-year-old kids, yeah. George. You know, you remember being 18 and 19 and 20. Yes, our parents, you know, make sure you go to church on Sunday and make sure you don't, you know, make sure you don't hang out with the girls, because, you know, that's Satan at work. You know, that's, you know, if you grew up in a Catholic family, essentially that's kind of those are the things that you heard. But of course, did we listen? Hell no. You know, we're 18, 19, and 20 years old. And, you know, so yeah, it's, you know, it's easy for everyone in power to say, yes, we're telling these kids to be careful and they're going to listen. And yes, no, they're not. You have sororities and fraternities, and there's going to be parties, and they're going to be going on dates and hanging out. So I don't know. I'm very skeptical that any of these youngsters are going to listen, first of all. Second of all, if they're going to be able to be safe. I don't know. I'm very skeptical. It was going to be very interesting to see what happens.
Well, I'm going to have the fingers crossed emoji.
Yeah.
that maybe some of these guys are following the example of the NFL. The NFL announced today that they had a positive test rate of less than 1%, which is fantastic.
It really looks like
obviously some players have tested positive before the season, some high profile guys like Ezekiel Elliott. But, it's now the interesting part is what do these guys do to keep that low? And have they learned the lesson from what's happened in Miami and St. Louis with Major League Baseball? So, it really sounds like, people are cracking down on the off the field protocols. So, maybe guys are learning their lesson. So maybe they're going to be professionals. It's very encouraging, and hopefully things go well because they do have travel ahead of them. But it's only going to be like one day back and forth travel. It's going to, it's encouraging that football is going to happen to see.
No, sure, definitely, and I think these guys in the NFL. I think one of the reasons, hopefully one of many reasons that rate is so low is that these guys. These are professional athletes and they're watching NBA games and they're like, you know what? I want to do that. Like, what are those guys doing? Because they're playing. They're pros. They're playing and they're getting paid. I want to do whatever they're doing. Oh, they're staying away from people. I'm going to stay away from people too. So hopefully, that's the model. What the NBA is doing is they're actually showing and proving that if you stay away from people and you play it smart, you wear your mask and all that good stuff. You're going to come out with these test rates below 1%, like the NFL has just announced. So, like you said, fingers tightly crossed. If everyone's on the same page, everyone understands the seriousness of it, and they can all maintain that, then I think we'll have a good football season.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to light a veladora.
Exactly. San Judas and San Jose. St. Joseph, my mom told me, the patron saint of having jobs. So I think all these guys in the NFL want to have a job. So everybody out there, go to a 99-cent store and all the other spots that where you get the veladoras at and light up the San Jose candle. That's for the patron saint of having a job. So do that, and all these guys can have jobs this NFL season.
Well, the Raiders, Josh Jacobs is talking about expanding his job and getting at least 60 catches this year, 60 receptions.
Let's go.
I went out on a limb and I did a, ride or die that he's going to be a top five running back. If he gets 60 catches, I'm taking that to the bank.
All day. Heck yeah. I've said it before. I'm a little bit. I'm a little bit high, we'll say, on the Raiders offense. I think Derek Carr, I think finally will kind of have a breakout because it wasn't that long ago before he had that nasty leg injury that he was putting together an MVP season. And yes, the demons are there. He hears the footsteps, and yes, he hasn't been as confident in the pocket as he was that year that he almost took his team to the Super Bowl, won MVP, whatever the case could have been, that could have, should have. Season, but so I think this year with Gruden there, I think Carr puts together something solid finally, and that definitely is a big plus for Josh Jacobs to do all these things and put together an awesome season too. So I'm excited.
No, I'm excited too. I mean, I'm drafting him a lot of my mock drafts and ahead of his ADP, and some people are my rankings haven't been the greatest sometimes, but I'm like, okay, right. We'll see.
Exactly.
Remember,
the people that trash talk your pick are the people that wanted that guy. That just take that to the bank. You go up there, you're taking AJ Brown early, or you're taking, DK Metcalf, early. And that first guy that says, oh, that's terrible, man. What are you doing? That's the guy that wanted him. So just keep that in mind.
So we had another, it seems like we're going to have a novella with the Colts running back committee between Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor. Coach Frank Reich said Marlon Mack is the starter going into the season, but they're going to ride the hot hand. So that just means they're going to play who's hot. So
exactly.
Both those guys are going to play.
Yeah, that's the motivator. I mean, I think we've all been around the block enough times to understand that when coaches say stuff like this, It is pointed. There's a specific reason when coaches say this. Hey, you know what? This is my guy, but whoever's got the hot hand, that's going to be the guy. So in other words, you know, you could say, you know, say what you want. This is going to be our guy. Marlon Mack's our guy. But when you throw that butt in there, we're going to ride the hot hand. Essentially what you're saying is, hey man, whoever's better is going to be the guy. It's the same thing. So it's coach speak, but we all know it. But like you said, I think there's definitely going to be some play for both of these guys in the backfield. You got Phillip Rivers coming in there, going to spread the ball around. Open up the running game there. So it should be interesting. Definitely should be interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, a little bit of news, with, Eagles head coach Doug Peterson clearing all COVID protocols and he returned to the team. And today, you know, it was in the first episode of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Anthony Lynn admitted that he contracted the COVID virus.
Yikes.
So, I mean, I'm glad he's through. Apparently, the Chargers have had zero infections, so they've had zero positive tests going into the season. So
good.
Let's hope it stays this way. Hope it stays this way.
We'll cheer that one for Rick. Rick's not here, but if Rick was here, he would be like, yes, thank God. You know, Anthony Lynn came back. You know, he's recovering. So definitely a plus. So there you go, Rick. I gave a little shout out to Coach Lynn for you.
So there was a very telling tidbit with AJ Brown talking about he improved his conditioning over the offseason because he found himself being fatigued in the fourth quarter of some games last year. I mean, he was a beast there at the end of the season, but can you imagine if he's in better shape and he's, you know, he's not getting tired? I think so many things. I mean, we talked about this in our AFC South preview. The arrows are pointing up for him. He's going to be wide receiver one. If he's in the best shape of his life, quote unquote,
which we say
hear all the time, we're going to
cliche meter off the chart.
Let's see if it works.
Yeah, no. We definitely talked about it. AJ Brown. Like I said before, I had AJ Brown last year, and that's scary. Like you said, that's pretty dang scary when a guy, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you have a boxer or whatever that's, you know, beating up on another guy. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm only at 50%. You know, I was boxing with one hand tied behind my back, essentially. It's just like, wow, you weren't even, like, putting in effort. You know, what A.J. Brown is saying is that, you know, all those monster points he was putting up, he was tired a majority of that time. It's like, wow. So if he's coming in saying, you know what, I'm going to take care of that. So now for all four quarters, I'm going to be ready to rock and roll. That's scary stuff, and I can't wait to see that. I'm looking for him on all my teams. I'm on mock drafts. I'm scooping him up. So, and Tannehill, of course, like I said, I had him too. I'm not a naysayer. You know, I'm not listening to all the pundits that are saying, you know, that what Tannehill did was a fluke. I'm all in. I think he's gonna have an awesome year. These two guys, stack them if you can.
I think it's good. Yeah, I'm grabbing him a lot in my mock drafts
right now.
I seem to be going running back early, and he's usually the first or the second wide receiver that I'm grabbing. I think he's staring at 120 targets this year.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. Who's his competition? I think we talked about that. Not Nadia. Much competition, right?
Nadia.
Yeah.
Oh. So. Speaking of competition, let's close out the AFC with the East.
The team that is
widely considered the beast of the East until Cam Newton signed in New England, but the Buffalo Bills, coming off a 10-6 season, playoff loss, but you know, it's so much is riding on Josh Allen. He had an improved season. He completed 58.8% of his passes for 3,089 yards. That was a 6% jump from last year. If he jumps another, you know, 4 to 6%, then, you know, you start thinking about it, because he did miss some bad throws. But, you know, we talked about this earlier. It really looks like the Bills are trying to build, you know, a Ravens 2.0. You got the mobile running back. You got a two-headed monster at running back. I'm sorry, mobile quarterback and a two-headed monster at running back, and then a couple of long ball threats on the receivers. You know, you really like Josh Allen this year.
Oh, absolutely. I love Josh Allen. And again, talking about the pundits, I was on Instagram today, and I'm you know, going through, as we do, you know, us fantasy football geeks, you know, we have, you know, a handful, half a dozen or a couple dozen, you know, fantasy football pages on our Instagram. And I've already seen a couple that have said that, you know, Josh Allen is is due for regression. And that weird thing that people are saying about Lamar Jackson and about Josh Allen and about running quarterbacks in general, he's going to run less this year. Oh, he's going to run less. Why? That's my question. Why is Lamar Jackson going to run less this year? Why is Josh Allen going to run less this year? Everyone loves to say that. Oh, man, but don't worry, because Lamar Jackson's going to run way less this year. Why? Why are people saying? I have no idea why. All I know is if you got the hot hand, go with it. Running the mobile quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, if they had success running, why all of a sudden would you say, like, wow, we had a lot of success with that last year? Let's not do that. You're not gonna do that. So I don't see any reason why Lamar's not gonna run. Josh Allen, I think he's gonna continue doing what he did. And again, it's just gonna open things up. He's a mobile quarterback, he's an awesome quarterback. We saw what he did. He took his team to the playoffs, and I'll say it again, watching this guy, his composure, his poise, he did not look like a rookie. The guy just has, he's like Joshy Ice, like, you know, like he's got ice in his veins. The guy is just super confident in the pocket. I can't wait to scoop him up wherever I can. I'm a big fan of the Bills. And now that they got Stephon Diggs, I'm even more of a fan. So I'm like you said, I think it's like Ravens 2.0. They're going to be great this year.
And you know what's funny? Like, Diggs and John Brown are big time deep threats. And I was looking at both of them. They just have, what was it that you had an average depth of ADOT, the average depth of target? Yeah, Stephon Diggs was number 10 in the NFL, playing with Kirk Cousins. Yep, John Brown was 14.5 ADOT, number 14 in the NFL. And that's where Josh Allen excels. He likes to throw the ball deep. Sometimes he overthrows guys, but these guys are burners, and they're gonna get out there. They're both considered great route runners. There are some people who are saying it's not a good mix, and there's obviously the naysayers who are talking about how Diggs changing teams that sometimes hurts a player. But I'm looking at this, and I think it could be a good marriage made in heaven. I think Brown's receiving yards, are not going to hit 1,000 yards, because I think Diggs is going to be the only 1,000-yard receiver on this team. But I don't think he's going to be – I think he's going to be close. I think he's going to be in the 900s, and I think he's still going to be a guy who's, going to be flex-worthy for some for a lot of teams, and he's going to have some big weeks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Diggs, I think, is – everything is looking good for him. Yeah, I wonder what the difference is going to be like for him. He's not going to have any games on turf. So he was playing, he played 8 games, he played every year, 9 games on turf, because he had the 1 game in Detroit too, at least nine games. So I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a difference there. But I think that, when it comes to what Josh Allen does, and with Cole Beasley, with the receivers, Cole Beasley, I think, is going to get hurt by his production. He was a great PPR play last year.
Yeah, every year he is. Even going back to his days in Dallas, he always gets targets and catches. Every game he always usually puts up a handful.
Yeah, I don't think. But and with Josh Allen, getting back to Josh Allen, let's talk about his other skill set, the running skill set. You talked about him running less, but he's a more physical runner than Josh Allen. Josh Allen, who's very elusive and gets out of bounds and gets down a lot quicker. Lamar Jackson gets out of bounds better. Josh Allen likes to contact a little bit more. He's kind of I compared him to Cam Newton, and the more I look at him, the more I like that comparison. They both had a lot of rushing touchdowns their first 2 years. Cam Newton had 22 his first 2 years. Josh Allen had 17. So, and they both like to throw it deep. They both had accuracy issues earlier in their careers. So, Allen, I think, is still a threat. Near the goal line, which I think hurts the next two players that we're going to talk about, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss.
That is true.
Singletary was so much of the guy that was that people were excited about last year. He was one of those rookies that people were excited about, and he was okay early on. Got hurt his hamstring. Was not very good in the red zone, had 17 red zone attempts, 2 touchdowns. Frank Gore had 25 and 3 touchdowns, but You know, he had, I was looking at, you know, Pro Football Reference, and I saw that his final eight games, he had 131 rushing attempts for 603 rush yards. And then he had 20 receptions for 136 yards. That got me excited until Zach Moss got picked up. how do you see, is this going to be a committee that's going to give us headaches all year?
It just might. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. We got Zach Moss coming in. He's, 5'9", 223. He's bigger than Devin Singletary all the way around. So, yeah, they may be using him with his size. I mean, if you're the coaching staff, you know what? You want that big bowling ball coming through if you're at the goal line. So he may get those vultures at the goal line. Like you said, it's either Josh Allen or Zach Moss and then Devin Singletary coming in third in the pecking order, you know, for those red zone or goal line carries. So it is going to be interesting. Devin Singletary obviously having an extra year of experience, but we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. But, yeah, to your point, this may end up being a headache because, anytime you have a mobile quarterback and you have a couple of running backs, you're going to have to be wondering whenever you're setting your lineup that Sunday morning, you know, who's going to get the run this week? You know, who's getting the ball? Who's going to score? So, yeah, you're going to be a couple of coin tosses, some dice throws. But, it may end up being a headache.
And I think, Josh Allen being such a threat near the goal line, I think it hurts both of them as far as the touchdown. Their touchdown potential, even though Zach Moss, I think, is going to be considered the better goal lineback. I mean, they've got a good offensive line, number 18. They've really shored up their offensive line that's come up in the last few years. But, this is going to be a great team. They're going to play on defense. They're going to play great defense. And then all of a sudden, just be threats on offense. I'm not getting a lot of Josh Allen in my picks. I'm kind of waiting on quarterback and getting people like Ben Roethlisberger and Matthew Stafford.
Oh, sure. But as a bye week QB, you throw him on your bench for sure. Yeah. You may not want him as your starter, although he is going QB7 right now. So if you're strategic, if you're taking some other picks instead and you ran out of all those guys, like the Ben Roethlisberger and Stafford and Cam Newton and whatnot, we'll have to wait and see where Josh Allen lands for you if you're able to scoop him up, as your second QB. But I guess we'll have to wait and see what your strategy is.
Well, speaking of two QBs, let's go to Miami. Miami. Yeah.
Let's go.
Vámonos a Miami.
Let's go. A la playa.
it's Fitzmagic was magic the second half of last season, especially in the closing weeks. He was in two QB leagues, he was a beast. He was a hombre. He's already said that he knows he's holding the seat. He's warming the seat for Tua Tagovailoa.
Ah, interesting.
He's 37. He's a guy who he knows his place in the pecking order. He's a smart guy, a Harvard guy. I think there's going to be enough for him to be a play early in the season, probably streaming. I mean, they got some tough matchups early on, but I look at him. I think he's someone who's going to be draft worthy, maybe as a backup, maybe somebody you platoon with, if you're not going for one of the elite quarterbacks. But really the big thing is, how long is he going to be the starter?
Right. And how's Tua doing? I mean, so what's the status on Tua? I mean, is he going to be ready? Is he, at some point, or what are they saying as far as prognosis for when he's going to actually be ready?
No prognosis. Everything is, all you hear is he's progressing just like we expected. He's having no setbacks. He's doing well. So it's a lot of coach speak for, we'll tell you when he's going to play.
Exactly. You're not getting anything right now.
Yeah. We're not going to predict it. I still look at week 11, bye week, week 11. That's, to me, I think that's the possibility that possibly the week that they switch over to Tua.
Okay.
Cause I think it's good, but, I think it'll be good at that point. If they're just kind of like, that'll be what, 10 games into the season. If they're like 3-7 or 4-6, it's kind of like, okay, let the kid play. If he's considered to be ready. Cause Tua, I mean, he was phenomenal. I mean, he had some great, he had some incredible weapons, with Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and some other guys who were there.
Yes, but, he did.
but the NFL game is so different. And then you add the health factor into it. So, I think ideally, he doesn't come in any sooner than that. So Fitzmagic, stay healthy. And I think for people with Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, that was something that's, you know, what they were doing was fantastic. Their
Devontae Parker last eight games with 5 TDs, 802 receiving yards. That was, that's a connection between him and Fitzmagic. You know, we talked earlier about Derek Carr and, you know, that idea of, you know, hearing footsteps, you know, after that, that bad leg injury. So how does that affect Tua? You know, like you said, we know that Ryan Fitzpatrick said he's going to mentor him. He's going to tell him, you know, to be confident in the pocket. You know, yes, those guys are coming. Those guys are big. Those guys are, you know, heavy when they land on you, you know, so be ready. So we're going to have to wait and see how Tua adjusts psychologically, you know, because he had that injury that he had was pretty rough, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. That was tough to take for anyone. So it's going to be interesting to see how hesitant he is, you know, how much he's you know, if he's getting the ball, getting rid of that ball a little bit earlier than he should, if he's hearing footsteps, you know, because he doesn't want to get hit. He doesn't want to get big guys to land on that hip again and, you know, have that all just kind of, you know, go up, you know, happen all over again, like a deja vu. So it will be interesting to see.
You know, Parker, I think, is going to be a player that, I mean, he's going for wide receiver 27 in the sixth round. I think he could be a bargain there. You know, if you're take your running backs early, I'd love to see him as my wide receiver two, or even my, you know, if you're lucky, you know, flex play.
Yeah.
And he was so good. I think he may have arrived and been, you know, I don't know if he's going to be getting, you know, if you double his last eight games, that's 1600 yards. I don't think he's going to do that, but I would not be surprised if he, you know, just mimicked the numbers that he did last year, just replicated them and did them again this year.
Sure. You know. And one thing to remember is that the Miami O-line is ranked by Pro Football Focus number 32. So Miami's going to be coming from behind a lot. There's going to be a lot of garbage time. So expect, you know, Fitzmagic and Devontae Parker to connect on, you know, deep routes and deep TDs when the other DBs are like checking their phones, you know, texting, you know, during the fourth quarter, and they're not even, you know, when they're up by 25, you know, they're not even going to care that Devontae Parker ran by them. So, you know, yeah, look for some big garbage time points between Fitzmagic and Devontae for sure.
Yeah, they'll be thinking ahead to some carne asada or
exactly what, you know, when the game's over,
whatever barbecue is happening in Miami.
Exactly. You know,
a lot of people, you know, there's been a lot of hype during the preseason for Preston Williams, and I'm not buying in. You know,
it's Miami. It's Miami.
Well, it's just in the fantasy community. There's a lot of talk up for Preston Williams. And, you know, he had a really good surprisingly good year early in the season, 32 receptions the first eight games before he hurt his knee. But he had a torn ACL in November. And I don't know if he's going to have enough time to recover. I mean, usually it's 12 months. I know Cooper Kupp came back and he looked great. So, you know, it's not to say that it doesn't happen, but Preston Williams, I'm not overly excited about him, mostly because of the next guy we're going to talk about, who I am excited about.
And that is
Mike Gesicki. He's tight end 14, and yep. He was just, I mean, he was a beast at the end of the season. And I know I got to see it a lot. I picked him up on one of my teams, on a couple of my teams.
There you go. You have the inside track.
Yeah. He just, I mean, it really looked like that Fitzpatrick was looking for him. And so, I mean, he's just an athletic marvel, very fast. He's one of the fastest tight ends as far as his 40 time at the combine.
Wow.
You know, they used him in the slot. You know, he came up big late in the season, you know, especially week 16 championship week, 6 receptions, 82 yards, 2 TDs. I think Fitzpatrick is going to look for him. I think Gesicki is a guy to look for, at, you know, late in the draft. If you passed on Kittle and Kelce and Andrews early on, I think he's a guy that he could be a rare find, you know, even being picked outside of a starting group.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like you said, I'm looking at that stat line. Week 16, six catches. Was it six?
Six catches
on 12 targets. Yeah, 82 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, anybody. I'm sure anyone who had him in their lineup is just, you know, getting ready to draft him again this year. So, yeah, definitely a guy to keep an eye on. And if Fitz was looking for him, you know, that's just going to continue. So, let's keep an eye.
This would also be, that's why Ricky would have been fun on this part, because he likes to bag on all of Miami and give me a hard time for liking Gesicki.
These guys are garbage. I don't know why anyone's even looking at this team. Whoever's on this team, you just need to pass. This is trash.
Muy bien. Basura.
That's my Rick impression.
the running backs, the situation, I mean, there's talent there, but is this going to be a basura situation where neither one gets a lead role?
We got Jordan Howard and we got Matt Breida. I mean, Matt Breida is one of the fastest guys in the league, right? He's a burner. But again, I mean, I don't know with an O-line – currently ranked 32. I don't know what kind of protection these guys are going to have and what kind of holes they're going to be able to see to put up some yards.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not going to be a great line. The defense, they did some improvements to it, but are they going to be, you know, just be throwing the ball all the time and not running, which plays into Matt Breida's skill set. Jordan Howard, you know, he's that first and second down guy. He's that guy that was just going to be rumbling, tumbling, and, you know,
rumbling, stumbling, bumbling.
Yeah, and I could see him getting a lot of carries early on, but I just don't know how much he's going to get, you know, if Miami falls behind by 14 points.
Exactly. Negative game script, as they say. And we talked about it just a little while ago. They're going to be behind. They are going to be behind. And once you're in a hole and, you're two, three touchdowns behind, the running game is pretty much, you know, shelved. You know, these guys are going to be hanging out on the bench, and Fitzmagic's going to try to somehow get back in the game by throwing the long ball, you know, because they're not going to be running. There's no way they're going to be running coming from behind, which they are going to be pretty frequently. So that's going to be tough for both of them.
If you had to pick one between the two of them, is there one you'd like better?
I'm going to say Breida, only because I'm looking that Jordan Howard did hurt his neck.
Yeah,
and that's always a tough one when you're, you know, especially a running back where you're like a pinball, you're getting hit just, you know, nonstop. Every time you have the ball, the only time that you start running, the only way you stop running is because someone just beat the crap out of you and you fell and you got tackled. So these guys take a lot of punishment. Running backs take a lot of punishment, and with a neck injury, I'm very, very leery of any running back that's had a neck injury. Matt Breida. He wasn't he the top gun in San Francisco for a while until Tevin Coleman showed up and then kind of messed everything up for everybody.
Coleman, Raheem Mostert, all those,
everything just kind of got thrown. But for a while there, Breida was the guy to have in San Francisco last year for a time. So, we'll have to wait and see. But if I had to answer your question, if I had to pick between these two guys, I would lean to Matt Breida.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think it's going to be Jordan Howard a little bit early, but I almost think I want to pick these guys on my bench and hopefully only have to play them here and there once or twice, you know, just either for injuries or hopefully it's just for bye weeks.
Exactly.
And kind of like, you know,
get a good matchup.
Persignarme and make and hope I get lucky. I had to do that with Jordan Howard once last year, and he went off for three touchdowns. And but that was with the Philadelphia O-line, which was one of the best in the NFL.
Big difference.
Well, you know, speaking of offensive lines and teams that have a lot of the ingredients to be successful, New England Patriots finished 12-4, won the division last year. You know, they've got the number 7 O-line. They had one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the NFL. But, you know, they had the big void left behind by TB12, Tom Brady, and it gets replaced. Stepping into that void is QB1, numero uno, Cam Newton.
Oh,
are you excited about? How excited are you to see not only just to have him playing again, but just to see him step into that position, because I think only a few, he's one of the few people who could really do it from a star quality standpoint.
Absolutely. Cam Newton is very, very intelligent quarterback. Cam Newton, yeah, I've had him on my team. And again, you have the inside track if you have a guy on your team at some point in fantasy, because you, when you watch the game, you kind of watch, and you know this, anyone who's in fantasy, when you're watching a game and you're watching your guy, I mean, you're watching everything they do, you know, and especially when it's a quarterback, you're watching how he runs the huddle, you know, how, you know, what he does, how he calls the plays, how he, you know, checks the defense, you know, how he audibles, everything that a guy does, you're analyzing and overanalyzing and dissecting all that stuff. And I've had Cam Newton a few times, and I just watched the guy, and the guy just knows what the hell he's doing. So this is going to be a great, great combination. Cam Newton, Bill Belichick. I just can't wait to see what they do together. I was, you know, talking about earlier when I said that I was on Instagram looking at, you know, different fantasy football pages. Somebody was saying that they see envision Cam Newton as being a QB1 this year. So I would love to see Cam Newton just blow up. You know, we remember what the guy did, you know, back in the day when he was in prime Cam Newton mode. Just, you know, he led his team to the Super Bowl. The guy can just do it. So can he still run? We will have to wait and see. My concern is the dang Patriots are dropping players like flies, man. All these guys are opting out, right? Like, what's going on with that?
Well, it was a lot. Yeah, just I mean, obviously, you know, they've got to do what's best for them. And, you know, hey, you know what? The bendición, vaya con Dios. Do what you need to do for yourself and for your family.
Yeah.
I think they're, you know, Belichick is going to figure something out. He's always got guys upon guys that are ready to, you know, step in. So I'm not worried so much about all the guys that have opted out. For me, the thing that there are a couple things that get me a little bit excited about Cam Newton, about taking a flyer on him. His last healthy year, 2018, he played 14 games. He got a little dinged up that year.
Yep.
That was the injury started to happen. But, you know, to me, the one big the big thing that really stuck out to me, he completed 67.9% of his passes. And he still rushed for 488 yards, and he had four touchdowns. So, I mean, the big thing that hampered him so much, even in his MVP season, he never completed above 60% of his passes. And now he's, you know, averaging, you know, high 60s. And if mm-hmm. he brings that to New England, I like that. And I think also I like the idea of what Josh McDaniels is going to do with his running opportunities, because of the fact that, remember, the year that Tim Tebow was a superstar in the NFL in Denver, who was his head coach? Josh McDaniels.
Yes. People forget that Tim Tebow took his team to the playoffs and won a playoff game.
Yep. A walk-off pass to Pittsburgh. So I just think that Josh McDaniels is salivating. He's still considered one of the brightest offensive minds in the NFL. And so all of a sudden, you look at him as the possibility of, you know, game planning around Cam Newton. I think it's going to be great, because I think it's going to be necessary, because I don't know if I want to touch this running back room. Sony Michel.
It is a room. This is like a group. This is like a running back. Like, this is a lot of running backs here, right?
Yeah, you got Sony Michel on the PUP list. I right now I think he's trending towards starting the season, you know, inactive, and it's mm-hmm. going to be. I think at that point he's got to sit six games. Damian Harris hardly touched the ball last year in his rookie year. Lamar Miller tore his ACL and his MCL late in training camp last year in one of the exhibition games. So he just recently signed. So. Is one guy going to take over? I think this is going to be an ugly committee, and the only running back I really was excited about Damian Harris until Lamar Miller signed. So really, I think the only guy
James White. Yeah.
Yeah. I just look at him. I look at the way Cam threw to CMC, run CMC in 2017 and 2018.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be toss it out to him.
Yeah, that's the one thing that Cam brings to New England is his knowledge of how to use CMC, or how they use CMC, and got him to be so successful. He gets to bring that over to Josh McDaniels, like you said, and share that. Like, look, here's what they're doing with CMC, and these are some of the things that, you know, got him so many TDs, and now Josh McDaniels can incorporate that knowledge into his offense And things just may be very interesting for James White this year. We're going to see, we may see some very interesting things. But to your point, this committee overall is going to be kind of ugly.
Yeah. And the receivers, it's basically N'Keal Harry and Mohamed Sanu. And it's kind of like you go for the potential of N'Keal Harry, who was a yak, you know, monstro in
yard after ASU. Catch.
Yeah. He was great at that, but you know, he had some injuries. He only played 7 games last year. Is he ready to break out? Mohamed Sanu came over late in the season. He was hampered by an ankle injury, but you know, all the reports are he lived with his trainers in great shape, worked out with Cam Newton too. Yep, so, yep. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, obviously, you know, there's Julian Edelman there. He's still going to be, you know, he's going to be a threat to catch 100 balls from Cam Newton. Right. So, you know, I still think it's, you know, grabbing Julian Edelman and maybe taking a flyer on Harry. And, you know, you look at Sanu, you know, maybe he gets drafted late in the draft, or you hope, you know, maybe you pick him up on waivers early in the season if, you know, you see he's getting a lot of targets from Cam.
What about tight ends for New England? Isn't New England like the tight end squad that they've always had, you know, tight ends to throw to with Gronk and company?
Gronk and company. Well, they got a guy named ICSC, so it's going to be, you know, for us, it's ICSCSCSC. But, you know, you look at the ADP, no tight end is in the top 32 for New England.
So, on a Bill Belichick coach team, there's no, he is known to find the diamonds in the rough. You know, he'll probably find some tight end that no one's heard of, and the guy comes in game one, you know, goes for 2 TDs, and then everyone wants him on the waiver wire, like, the next day. So Belichick is known to do that. He finds these tight ends, you know, from, you know, Podunk University, and, you know, they end up being a superstar. So I guess we'll have to wait and see who that guy is going to be.
No, I just I look at him. I mean, I'm not picking any tight end there.
Right. No, I'm not saying I am. Not yet.
Yeah.
Until we see that guy that goes for 2, you know, on Monday Night Football, which generally, I don't know, for whatever reason, New England, they do that. They find that tight end that does magical things. So.
So our last team, the New York Jets, finished 7-9 last year. You know, they were not a good offense, only scored 276 points on the season. So they were not good. They were number 31 in total rushing yards at 1,257, which was only 51 more yards than Lamar Jackson got by himself last year. So,
oh, my God. That is a stat. Wow.
So it's yeah, you know, I think in this off season, no coach has gotten more just
Adam Sputum,
Adam Gase. I mean, maybe Bill O'Brien is a close second for his trades, but at least he's made the playoffs. Adam Gase, I mean, he's still living off of the year with Peyton Manning, but you know, I think this is a team. You know, they invested in their offensive line. You know, the GM Joe Douglas comes from Philadelphia, where they always, you know, they always preach the offensive line. They got a big guy, Mekhi Becton, there one of their tackles. But you know, they traded Jamal Adams, so their defense isn't going to be that good. We're looking at shootouts. So is that playing into the hands of Sam Darnold, who had a sneaky good second half of the season?
Interesting. Yeah. No. Yeah. Obviously, you know, we remember that Mono kept him out of a huge chunk of last season. But his last 8 games, 1,947 passing yards. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. Was it 13? How many passes? 13 touchdown passes.
Only four interceptions.
There you go. Wow.
So. The team went 6-2 in those games. I mean, there were some clunker teams in there, but, you know, they had a big win against Pittsburgh in there. I mean, you know, I want to dislike the team, but I do remember Sam, you know, watching Sam Darnold in his USC days and being like,
yes,
this guy might be a little different. This guy might be a little different. So he was a guy I was keeping an eye on last year. You know, he's QB 29 this year. So, you know, he's probably only getting drafted in 2 QB leagues.
Right.
But I look at this and I'm kind of like, I'm keeping an eye on him again, at the very least on the waiver wire.
I don't know. What about, I mean, what's, who's in, I mean, as far as his receiver core, I know I was, I was a big fan of Robbie Anderson. He's gone. Who do we have left? We have Jamison Crowder, who's currently wide receiver 48, Brashad Perriman at 63, and Denzel Mims at 69. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, there's not very much trust being put into Sam Darnold's receiving core. So I don't know. It's not looking good. At least from a fantasy standpoint, you know, his wide receivers are not getting a whole lot of love as far as drafts and whatnot.
Yeah, Crowder is going to be an interesting PPR play because he grabbed 78 balls last year and he's very good. He's a good guy. He's a good number two receiver. You know, right now he's looking like the number one. Brashad Perriman, when Chris Godwin and Mike Evans got hurt in Tampa Bay, he lit up those last three games of the season. 17 receptions, 349 yards, 4 TDs. You know, I think Darnold's going to have to be looking for him. I mean, and they invested a second round pick in Denzel Mims. He's a bigger guy, 6'3", 207. So he's, that physical specimen who's very fast and has a great catch radius. But he's a guy who's got to adapt to the NFL. Could we look at him at being like a second half breakout, like a DK Metcalf, Debo Samuel, and AJ Brown last year? Hopefully. I know New York Jets fans are hoping because there's no stud. There's no stud that you look to as being the guy out there. When it comes to the guy, you're looking at running back Le'Veon Bell. He's getting paid like the guy. And there, I saw a note on Roto World today that really just kind of ticked me off. Me hizo enojado. He wants to play at 210, 215, that he says he wasn't close to being in top shape last year. And I'm sitting there thinking, how is this possible?
He took a year off.
Yes. Yeah. What did he not work out? It's like, you're a professional athlete. Your body is your temple. That pisses me off.
Well, that reeks of excuse is what it is. Yeah. I honestly doubt that any of that he's saying is anywhere near the truth. Le'Veon Bell, we know that guy, when he was in Pittsburgh, he was in tip-top shape. He was a beast. I seriously doubt that in the entire year that he had off without any injury, that he did not come into Jets training camp last year in tip-top shape. There's no way. I know Vic drafted him. Vic's our commissioner, and Vic does his homework. And I'm sure Vic watched him in preseason games, and I'm sure he saw, what Le'Veon Bell's potential was, that he was in good shape, and that's why Vic took him at number four last year. So I think that's a bunch of crap that he's saying that he was out of shape last year. There's no way. I think that he just had a bad year, and he just wants to make an excuse for having a bad year, saying, oh, yeah, I'll chalk it up to being out of shape. But what does that say, really? I mean, if a guy comes out and says, I was out of shape last year and I was lazy after having an entire year to do nothing, that doesn't really give me a lot of confidence in the guy, because if you're basically what he's saying is, I'm just a lazy guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had an entire year and I was lazy. So no, I'm not going to trust you, Le'Veon Bell. If that's what you're saying, why should I believe you this year? If you were lazy last year, why are you not going to be lazy this year? So I'm not buying any of that. Based on him saying that, I'm staying away. No way, man. There's no way that there's any truth to that.
I mean, he's a fourth rounder. If I went receiver early or went tight end early, I may look at him as being my second running back, but man, it's just that just no me gusta.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
The thing I do like, I will say the thing I do like about him, 66 receptions. So he's on only 78 targets.
Yeah.
He is still going to be a threat out of the backfield. That's why it's like in PPR leagues, and it's kind of like, he's going to remain a threat.
Definitely for PPR, for sure. He's going to make those catches because we talked about the receiving core. They're not getting a whole lot of love. They're kind of deep on as far as ADP goes. Le'Veon Bell may be the target hog there for the Jets.
Yeah, and I've said it before. He really, it's really annoying to see him have a clunker of a season.
Yeah.
When he drafted him as the number one pick, but you know, as a number four pick, as a round four pick, as your second or maybe even your third running back.
Great value. Great value there.
Maybe you like him a little better. So
yeah, no, for sure.
I don't know. I haven't written him off like I have some other guys yet. So last guy we're going to talk about, Chris Herndon, going as tight end 22, going in the 15th round. I mean, what a lost year for him last year. Mm-hmm. Suspended for the first 8 games of the season. Comes in week 10, gets hurt in the very first game. I think even the first quarter, misses the rest of the season.
That is the worst case scenario. Like, you know, you step on the field, your first game, oh my God, this is fantastic. Oh my God, I'm out for the season. Like, wow.
But you look at him and you kind of think back to the rookie year where he went for 39 catches in 56 targets, 502 receiving yards. You know, he had a great career at University of Miami at the U.
Yeah, at the U.
Tight end 22, you're not drafting him for the most part, you know, because who's drafting a backup tight end unless you really need to?
Right.
In deeper leagues, maybe he's a guy that pops. I worry about guys who've had injuries so early in the season. Obviously, Travis Kelce did that, but this guy, I'm kind of like, I'm going to keep my eye on him because, you know, Sam Darnold does like to throw underneath a little bit, and he might be a target that he's looking for.
For sure. If Sam Darnold can just put together something, I mean, like you said, at USC, the guy did some great things, and he definitely has potential. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm looking for Sam Darnold to finally break out. I mean, if he didn't have the mono last year, I think he would have had a great season. Like you said, he finished the season 6-2 with those last 8 games. So there was something there, that, you know, the could have been season. So if he can put something together like that again this year, you know, the Jets may end up doing a little bit more than what people may be thinking.
All right, well, that's going to close it up with the AFC for us. And, hey. Close it up for – eso es todo for our show. Gracias otra vez to our friends at Anchor.fm for being our hosting network and for making sure our independent podcast gets out in the Familia community. Please subscribe. Leave us a review. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, at FamiliaFFB, as well as our Familia FFB Facebook page. Gracias otra vez. And remember, everybody, todos somos familia.
Salud.
And póngate la máscara.
Póngate la máscara.